Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All you have to do, if you are listening to me now, all you have to do is go to the ticket booth and say La Cheeserie. You know, you can say it softly if you're embarrassed.
Say it loudly.
Say La Cheeserie, and you're going to be let in for free. You'd be crazy not to do this.
Maybe delay the salute until you're inside the gate, but yeah, definitely say La Cheeserie.
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping that as many as 10 people do that.
And ask for a Whopper and fries.
Yeah, and see how much it costs.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
So I would have set the over-under at the amount of people who would go to the Syracuse Mets game last night and say La Cheeserie to be let in free. I would have set it at 6. And the reason I would have set it at 6 is because I don't really believe that many people in the area of Syracuse, New York, listen to this show, maybe 50, you know, and not all of them could get there. My high school classmate, Stephen Pearsall, listens. He lives in Cortland. He goes to Syracuse games a lot, Syracuse basketball games a lot. He might have gone, but he didn't go. So I don't know. I would have set it at 6. Michael, where would you have set the number?
What do you think?
And by the way, I don't have the number.
What do you think
yet.
The capacity of their stadium is?
Probably 8,000 to 10,000.
Okay, we're going standing room only because La Cheeserie night is a destination wedding.
So you would think it would be many people. I would have said 6.
I would assume most people are traveling with either a friend, significant other, somebody in their family, inner circle, another listener. So I'm going to go up to 30.
I have heard, and I don't know for a fact, Jason has not emailed us, I don't believe, the president of the team.
We can go back.
You know, I don't think we have an email. But I have heard from secondhand source that Claire Natola is saying there were like 70 people. 70 people. I don't know if that's true. We have some email later in the show. I don't know how many. What do you got?
I did get one. I'm sorry. I forwarded it to Michael late last night. I must not have gotten it. Yeah, but he says, I've now been part of an inside joke, secret promotion that worked to perfection and made 75 people happy.
So 75 people at La Cheeserie night. I'm also told that Michael Sands sent swag to the Syracuse Mets, including some glassware and a Calvert-Woodley t-shirt. I'm told that happened. And those were giveaways.
That is fantastic. He didn't send any of the cheese?
I don't know that he sent any of the actual cheese. La Cheeserie is an actual
cheese counter.
That's all it is. It's a small cheese counter in a liquor store. That's all it is. But it now has nationwide fame.
Do you see the pictures of Dan Byrne?
I haven't seen the
great
pictures
looking
of Dan
hat.
Byrne. I haven't seen him. I have some emails to read later in the show.
Okay, the emails have pictures attached.
And I understand also that one of the items that they sold was a hot dog for $5 with sea salt on it, and that one was a TK burger and fries basket, and they sold it not for $13.72, but for $13.24. Wasn't it $13.72 was the Burger King price
that
for me?
That was the Burger King, yes.
He sold it for $13.24, which I didn't understand.
He says here.
I found that out from DG. DG wrote me about his cousin going. His cousin
Jason wrote me and said they sold them for $13.27, and he says they actually sold two of those.
Just two. So it is an incredible honor that this happened, and an even greater honor that more than 6 people showed up. This will encourage people all around the country to do this, and I just think it's very nice. 75, that's the count?
Just wait till next year.
Wow, right. That's amazing. Yeah.
It says Chatter was the official sponsor of the game and had its logo up on the video board.
There is no Chatter. It doesn't exist.
That's brilliant.
Wow. By the way, speaking of littles, I was playing PB Dye golf course the other day before Columbia reopened. I ran into Neil from Rockville. He's a member there. I just thought I'd mention that. Ran into Neil from Rockville. I'm just amazed at this thing. So the big news in the world is Queen Elizabeth passing away. 96 years old, am I correct? 96?
Yes. Yes.
And she had been the queen for how long?
I think since, I want to say 1947, maybe.
She's been the queen longer than I'm alive. I'm the oldest person you know, and she's been the queen longer than I'm alive. I have said this many times. I was in her company once. It was this odd. I never understood it. She went to a Baltimore Orioles game at Camden Yards. I don't know why. Maybe to meet Cal. I just don't know why. And you know, where you line up on the first base and third base line before the game in big games, you don't usually do that in a regular game. They did that, and the queen walked up and down. She's very short, very tiny woman, 5'1", 5'2", in a hat, 5'5". I never understood it, why she would. I mean, if you're going to go to a game, wouldn't you go to a Yankee game? She went to an Orioles game. It's very odd, but I saw her. I saw her live. I was in her presence, though. Did not meet her, did not greet her or anything like that. And I could never get out of my head, and it's over 50 years. It's 50, probably 55 years. Paul and John singing Her Majesty's a Pretty Nice Girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say. That's all I can think of. Her Majesty's a Pretty Nice Girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say. It's an unbelievable run because her son Charles, pretty much my age, now he becomes the king. And now I assume, and by the way, his father lived to 99, his mother lived to 95, 96. So he's got time left. I assume that the public discourse, Michael, will be about should he stay until he dies and then it passes to William, or because William seems to be really good at this and really popular, should he do it for a very short amount of time and retire as king and let William be king?
Yeah, I think that's what some of the population was asking of Her Majesty, as to when would it be appropriate to step down if there was a time, particularly once Prince William had his first male child.
She did not step down.
No.
She took it to the limit, as the Eagles would say. She did not step down. So maybe Charles will not step down. Now, Camilla will not be queen, right? Camilla will be, is she prince consort or something like that? There's some special title. It's not like in the loser category. Do you know what I mean?
Queen
consort.
It's
better than that. It's queen consort.
Yep.
It's better than that. It's not a slap in the face at all. In fact, it's an honorarium, and it's pretty nice, but she will not actually be the queen. Will Kate, when it goes to William, since Sean seems to know about this stuff, will Kate be queen?
I think so. That I don't know.
Like, everybody likes William and Kate, right? Harry, yes. They're not crazy about, but Harry's like sixth in succession. Harry's got no shot. He's got no shot because William already has children. He's got male children.
He's got a full brood.
Yeah, he's got three, like you've got three.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he has a girl.
Okay, he's got one girl. But here's who's never, Randy Andy, never going to be king.
No.
Never.
No.
No chance he's going to be king. But Harry went back to see the family. So maybe rapprochement with the family. It's the only monarchy that matters. It's the only monarchy people can name. It's the most nostalgic of all monarchies. And they don't get in the way. They don't try to govern. They just go out there and say hello to people.
But then you look at, when you see the numbers as to how many prime ministers that Queen Elizabeth sort of welcomed to
50?
Form a government, and you look at her role as a bridge from sort of fairy tale land into the modern world.
She's the constant. Yes. She helped facilitate that by not kicking and screaming, right? By not saying, what happened to me? She took the role that they gave her, and she did the best she could with it. Everybody liked her, right?
Yeah, and just understanding duty, as you go around and read all these obituaries as to the early sort of role she was pushed into because she thought her father was going to live much longer than he did.
He died in his 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was 1952. I had that wrong. It was 1952 when she...
Oh, okay. Then she's not been queen longer than I'm alive. So she's only been queen for 70 years? Didn't they have a diamond jubilee a couple of years? Are you sure?
Yes, yes. Yeah, it was 70
Well, it's your country.
Years. It was this past summer.
Yes. When did he die? He was King George. He was the king's speech, right? That's mm-hmm. that guy.
Right.
When did he die? Because he was not in England when he died, and she was not in England when he died.
Was
she was in Kenya.
Yeah.
Well, the way it works is, I mean, when one monarch dies, I mean, there's not sort of like a period where they say, oh, we're going to sort this out. I mean,
No. It was that day.
Yeah. So it was February of 1952. And she's tied, I believe, with Louis the 14th as the longest.
And Louis the 14th said, let me think for a minute, son. Is that right? So she already had two of her children. She was not the queen having the children. She was a princess having the children.
Correct.
Because Charles and Anne are older, were born before 1952, I believe. Maybe not. Charles was. Charles was born in 1948 or 49. Am I correct on that? What's Charles's birthday? Anyway, he's king now. And I read this story in the Post that he doesn't necessarily have to be King Charles if he doesn't want to be.
Oh, he could choose a new name?
He's got a couple of middle names. And he could choose. One is Arthur, for example.
You gotta go King Arthur.
I don't think you ever go King Arthur because everybody knows King Arthur.
You just sit on the throne for a little bit?
I don't think you do King Arthur.
Bring back the round table.
1952. Okay, so I had that wrong. She's been queen forever. Yeah. And forever. She's the longest running show on Broadway. She's Les Miserables. You know, forever and ever and ever. And everybody liked her. Yeah. You know, everybody liked her.
Well, you look at the fact that they do public opinion polls on this, but you look at what happened to her after the crash with Diane in the late 90s, and it took years to get for the people to trust her again, and then...
That was rough.
Yeah.
That was the great movie, The Queen. That's Helen Mirren. That movie is so good that if you're someone like me and you're not British, you think that's true. You think everything in that is true. Like it felt like history. That movie is so good. May not be true. You feel the same way about The King's Speech.
Well, is that what's happening now with The Crown?
I don't watch The Crown.
No, I know, but I'm just in terms of how it's zoomed in.
I think people seem to...
Small time periods.
I think people think The Crown is true. It might be true. I don't know. You know it's not true?
By the way...
Michael Clayton. It's great, but it's not true. It's not true.
What? By the way, Charles has decided he's going to be King Charles III, so he's already picked that name, and he was born in November of 1948. So yeah, he's basically
my age.
Yeah,
you know, and
you could be king.
I can't be king. He can be king. he's in the early days for people who were in their 60s and 70s who remember Mad Magazine. Everyone thought that Alfred E. Newman, that the picture of Alfred E. Newman was based on Charles, sure. Prince Charles, that's what he looked like. I find him interesting. He cares about plants. He's not obtrusive. Everybody's down on him because of the Diana thing. He didn't want to marry her. He never wanted to marry her. They picked her out for him. She didn't want to marry him. She did a great job. She did. She did a great job as princess, but it was not to be. Not to be. Tennis. Nigel, you're up at the tennis. You stayed up all night the other night and you watched Alcaraz win. I got to tell you, I watched last night Jabeur and Garcia.
Oh, it was a terrible match.
Dreadful beyond words. It was like being sentenced to prison to have to watch that. It was really bad. Tiafoe can save the tournament. If Tiafoe loses, the ratings are going to be terrible from now on because they're against football. Just terrible. And they don't have Serena or Nadal.
And the other men's semifinal is not something that, you know, people...
You don't know who they are.
Right. Karen Khachanov and Casper Ruud, even though they're great players, it's just, you know...
If they were great players, you'd know who they were.
Yeah.
But, you know who Nadal is. He's a great player.
But the kid Alcaraz...
He's good.
I mean, he's worth the price of admission. He is as good as it gets. And that match...
Wilbon says he's played 2 5-setters in a row. He has no chance against Tiafoe.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, he's 19. I think he's got an endless, you know, pool of energy to draw from. And
this is what I said on PTI yesterday in response to Wilbon. I say he's 19 years old. A 19-year-old in New York City is routinely up to 3 in the morning, and it has no effect. He has a full day to rest. He's going to be fine. Yeah. He's going to be fine.
I think if Tiafoe's going to win...
Tiafoe proved it already. Tiafoe, by getting to the semis... Yeah. That's all he had to do.
And he could win. I mean, he needs to serve big, and he needs to end points quickly, because the longer Alcaraz is in a point, he just gets to everything, and he wears you down.
By the way, he hits it 300 miles an hour, Alcaraz.
Yes, he does. He
kills
it.
I mean, Tiafoe hits it hard. Alcaraz hits it harder.
Yeah.
Hits it harder.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the Swiatek match, and I think I joined 300 other million Americans by not watching? Was it any? I mean, I didn't care.
It was quite good. The first match was so bad
that I went right to the football.
And it was odd because the woman who lost, Garcia, she had played brilliantly all summer long and then just completely forgot how to play last night.
Yeah.
The second match was good. It's funny, Świątek, she lost the first set and then took a bathroom break. And it was not a Tsitsipas, like, gamesmanship. Because in the post-match interview, one of the interviews said, so what did you tell yourself in that break in the bathroom that you regrouped? She's like, no, I actually really had to go to the bathroom. That's what was going on there. And then she sort of sorted it out and came back and won. It was actually a lovely match.
Yeah.
I'm not selling you, am I? No.
Yeah, you're not going to sell me on that. No. Świątek, Jabeur, I mean, they're the two best, right? Aren't they one and two?
One and five. Jabeur's five. Yeah.
But Jabeur made... I figured because she made the finals at Wimbledon, she'd be two.
Yeah, no. Well, they didn't get any points for that, remember? So.
They should have gotten points. They actually played.
Yeah, they should have. So, but yeah, but I wish folks had been up to be able to stay up and watch the Alcaraz Sinner match.
Wilbon said it was one of the five greatest sporting events he'd ever watched on television. He loved it.
It was amazing. I mean, every time you thought, and I was actually going to talk to you about this because I've heard you and like Barry and other great writers we've had on the show. When you're writing a piece at a game and you're like, oh, I've written the end, and then the end changes, you like have to keep redrafting your
column. Let me tell you something. In the modern day newspaper, which is delivered online, it doesn't matter when something ends. You write and you get it online as soon as you can. But if that ends at 10 minutes to 3 in the morning, which it did, no newspaper can get it. It's over. The runs are over. There's no late newspaper of the big newspapers that can accommodate it. So it's just not in the paper. It's not in the paper. That's too late. 3 o'clock in the morning is too late.
Yeah.
Too late. I'm glad you stayed up and watched it.
Yeah, it was as great a match, I think, as I've ever seen. And, you know, I'm talking about like the old, going back to Borg and McEnroe.
Yeah.
Or even the Nadal and in Federer matches in Wimbledon, you know, back-to-back years where they're just insane matches. This was, and you're watching these two kids and you're like, you know, because Sinner's great too. I mean, he's right up there with Alcaraz. And you're like, these guys are really going to be, you're going to see them in finals for years to come. I mean, that's sort of what you look at and you see.
It's too bad because it would have been better if they had played in Syracuse on La Cesarina night in the outfield. Yes. Again, I would have set the over-under at 6, and there were apparently
75
people. So you get blown away by that. We'll take a break. Who's first? Jason Lockenfour is first?
Jason, yes.
Jason Lockenfour. He can talk about last night's game. Surprising score to me. I'm not terribly surprised that Buffalo won. It's a great way for Chuck Todd to open up, go 0-1.
Surprised by the first half?
Well, the first half was even.
Yeah.
Josh Allen's good. He's really good. He completed his first 10 or 11 passes, and one was stolen out of the hands of a receiver. He ran. He's good. He may be what they say. He may be. We'll take a break. Jason Lockenfour, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Chris Rozelle. He writes, "Hello, I've been a fan of the Tony Show for a long time on PTI. And my dad listens to the podcast religiously. I'm a banjo player out of Denver. I've recently recorded an album of my own banjo compositions with a wide range of style. My dad suggested I send this along to you as he really enjoys the music you all choose for your show. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for your time and consideration. I love banjo music. I'm that guy. I really, when Steve Martin used to play the banjo 100 years ago on Saturday Night Live, I thought, this is such great talent. So I love this. This is called Sisyphus Roll. What an interesting title. Sisyphus Roll by Chris Rozelle. Thank you, Chris. Plays in Jason Lockenfora. Let's start with live action. We haven't had live action in many, many months. America, so other than Michael Wilbon, who actually went to the WNBA game last night rather than why, and good for him, but his team lost and got eliminated. Chicago lost. Other than Michael Wilbon, everybody else in America tuned in to this particular football game, which featured the Super Bowl winner from last year and the Super Bowl sort of favorite already this year, Buffalo at the Rams. Buffalo very convincing in the second half. What is your takeaway from the result of that game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few, and one is obviously the Buffalo Bills. When there's a team that sort of like everyone's darling, right? Like you have a hard time seeing people who cover this league, who pay attention to this league. You know, you say a bad thing about them. It's sort of the preseason prediction time of the year, and who's going to win what, and who are the best teams, and the Bills are, you know, almost unanimous. There's a part of you that starts to say, well, wait a minute, maybe there's, you know, what are we missing here? This league isn't that easy to figure out. Is there an underlying issue or issues that are being sort of ignored or overlooked or whatever? So I think there's a natural tendency to start to take a step back and say, wait a minute, man, this line has moved a lot, you know, in the period of 3 weeks from the Bills getting points to the Bills giving the Super Bowl
2.5
winner at home almost a field goal. So, and then, you know, there's no Brian Daboll there anymore. So you're kind of like, all right, well, they're not infallible. Let's see it for real. And it looked kind of infallible. They had their issues, obviously a couple of turnovers that they would want back. But even if you're watching the game, even when those miscues occur, it was clear who the better football team was. It was clear from the opening drive. And you're kind of sitting there saying, how are the Rams in this thing when they're not really executing and their offensive line is getting run over and you're not noticing Aaron Donald as much as you normally would? And yet, you know, it's 10-10 at the half, and then you're still saying, well, anything is possible, and the Rams are a good football team, and they obviously are the champs. So, you know, let's see. And then the second half is even more of a beatdown with the first half, and now the Rams aren't able to stay in it, courtesy of turnovers. They're just hemorrhaging points, and the Bills are seemingly doing whatever they want when they have the ball and when they don't. So, I didn't know that if the Bills' pass rush would come together that quickly. You know, is Von Miller going to need an adjustment period? You know, Boogie Basham and Rousseau, are those guys going to be ready to go from week one, or is there going to be a little bit of an adjustment period? And they weren't blitzing. They weren't doing anything super exotic. They were doing, you know, what Leslie Frazier ideally wants to do is get pressure with four and sit back and play zone and be able to fill up a lot of the downfield areas with defensive backs and linebackers. And it really worked. And Matt Stafford was under duress all night. And so my takeaways are, the Bills are really good. And the things that we thought would take them to another level seem to be there, certainly are there right now. And then also, you know, Andrew Whitworth was a big part of that whole Rams turnaround, and as a leader and as a very capable left tackle. So you have to have some concerns about the Rams' offensive line, and maybe that wasn't a great matchup for them, but that didn't look very good. And Matt Stafford had this elbow thing going on all summer, and if Matt Stafford's going to get sacked 5-6 times a game, they're going to be in trouble. So, you know, it's one game. We don't want to go crazy and make too many, you know, overarching remarks from it. But the Bills certainly looked the part, and I have to think the Rams are a little bit concerned about their ability to mitigate a pass rush when, again, they weren't bringing numbers. They were just beating people.
I would not take issue with any single thing that you've said, but I will point out that yesterday on the PTI program, the question about this game was, which team do you have more confidence in, the Rams or the Bills? And what I said was, I don't think the Rams are going to repeat. Nobody repeats. Two teams in the last 25 years, Denver in 98 and the Patriots in 04, have repeated. So I'm not picking them again.
Yeah.
But I said the path to the Super Bowl is significantly easier, in my mind, in the NFC than the AFC.
Oh, yeah.
You got to worry about Tampa Bay, Green Bay, and maybe San Francisco. In the other place, Buffalo has to worry about Kansas City, Tennessee, the Raiders,
yeah,
the Chargers, the Colts, the Broncos, the Ravens, the Bengals. And yeah, Wilbon said, well, half of those teams will drop off the face of the map. Well, I don't know that that's true. I think the AFC is far. What I said to Wilbon was, when you get in the blocks in the AFC, you look to your left and your right, there's speed. There's speed in that division,
yeah,
right?
Oh, I think there's no doubt about it. I think the balance of power, the pendulum has swung heavily in the favor of that conference, and I think there will be teams that, you know, miss out on the playoffs in the AFC that are like the 8 and the 9 seed in the AFC.
And they're good.
That we would say, you know what, that might be the 4 seed in the other conference.
Right.
Like, that's just the reality if we're going to be honest about the degree of, you know, the level of talent and blue chip players and coaching acumen and all that. So I'm entirely with you. Now, look, the league is, it changes from year to year, and last year doesn't guarantee you a whole lot. And the parity thing is real, and, you know, every year there's, you know, 5 or 6 teams that made it that don't, and there's all these new teams there. And so there will be teams that fall off, and there will be teams that we sort of anointed or quasi-anointed in August, who by November nobody's even paying attention
That's
to.
Right.
And,
That's right.
And part of that will be because we missed. And part of it will also be the nature of football, where injuries and attrition it plays such a huge role. And there's some luck and some schedule luck. So, you know, some of it's on us and some of it is just the way it plays out. But, no, I think the AFC is
much
more difficult.
I agree with that. One of the most interesting things this weekend is the fact that Baker Mayfield gets to play against Cleveland and Russell Wilson gets to play against Seattle. Steve Young was on the show, and I asked Steve Young, because it was my turn to ask a question, when you have a personal grudge, do you play better? And he just laughed. He said, you can't be involved in that. That's crazy talk. You just have to get better. And people with personal grudges usually have grudges because they weren't good enough where they were, so they just have to get better. What are your thoughts about Mayfield and Wilson and opening up against their former teams?
Well, look, the fact that their very first game in these new places is against the former team, you can't pretend you've got, and the schedule comes out in like whatever, April, and you got all this time to think about it and marinate on it, and you've got your boys saying, oh man, you know, we're going to get you, you know, joking around, and oh, you know, oh no, man, you're going to see what you're missing. Like, hey, they're human beings. Like, there's that element certainly exists. Now, I think in this particular instance, you've got two quarterbacks with very different mindsets, though. You know, you've got Russell Wilson, whose whole sort of existence on the mental side of things is keeping everything neutral, and that's what he strongly believes in, and that's why he believes he's been able to make the sort of comebacks in games that he's made and not get too carried away think about how many times you'd watch the Seattle Seahawks game in the first half and you're like, how does anybody think these guys are any good? Like, what the hell is this operation?
Yeah, they stink in the first half.
They can't even get a first down. And then at the end of the game, they would go 37-24. I guess they're pretty good. So I think Russell's wired a certain way where while he will find this interesting and unique, and there'll be a part of him that absolutely, I don't care what Steve Young says or anybody says, he wants to show Pete Carroll and John Schneider, like, you guys really thought it was better to go out there with Geno Stone, then pay me again?
Right.
You think I'm a little bit washed? All right. Baker Mayfield, the grievance side of things, it's like that's his brand. That's his fuel. Like he and Russell has some of that too. Oh, I only got picked in the third round, and oh, I couldn't. You know, I had to go to Wisconsin and all that. But like Baker, it's his whole id. Like it's his fuel. Like I don't think Baker can sort of hide that. You know what I mean? I don't think Baker can go through warm-ups and the whole pregame routine and the first drive and whenever something good happens and kind of stay mellow. Nor do I think he necessarily has to because he was the first overall pick, and a lot of this stuff did work for him at varying times in his career to varying degrees. But you certainly can't let it take over. You certainly can't. If you have a bad start, you know, really let it fester and start throwing tirades and kicking stuff on the sidelines, and there's still 55 minutes left in the game, and people are like, bro, the season just started. What's wrong with you? But this is a little bit crazy to me. You know, the fact that it worked out to where it's literally their first game in their new place ever, and it's against the guys who didn't want them.
I completely agree. I would point this out about Mayfield. I know that if you watch a lot of television, almost everybody thinks Mayfield stinks. Baker Mayfield walked on in two different colleges, ended up as the starting quarterback in two different colleges, won the Heisman after walking on at Oklahoma. If you think that you can just dismiss somebody who's done that, you're crazy. You're crazy. Right, Jason?
I agree. Now, you know, what kind of operation is Carolina? And, you know, what has the offense?
That's garbage.
I mean, this is also a team that fired their offensive coordinator, like, you know, at the end of a bye week last year. So is this the right village for him? That still remains to be seen. But there's some interesting pieces there. And they're catching the Browns at a very unique time in that they are entering a period of at least 11 games where the guy they anointed their franchise savior has been banished from the league.
Yeah. No, you're right. All right, plug your radio show for us.
You guys can listen to more of this banter and yakking 2 to 6 weekdays.
It's good.
Every weekday on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, or you could stream us on the Odyssey app, or listen over the web, or I guess if you're listening, www.1057thefan. Enjoy week one. Thank you, Tone.
I talk to you next week. Jason Lockin, four of Boys and Girls. We will come back. Jeff Ma will join us when we come back. I will still be coughing at that point. C'est la vie. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Brandon Costello, singer-songwriter, Lexington, Kentucky. Wagon,
Dan Byrne produced a smile.
This is a Dan Byrne tribute. Imagine that. The Dan Byrne tribute band. How great would that be? Brandon writes us, most of my songs are about sex or depression or both. That's funny. This song is about what happens after four littles are picked up for robbing a bank. That was Dan Byrne's thing the other day, robbing banks. Very, very good. Michael, if people like Brandon Costello, who is our friend, want to send in their music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiserhow.com.
And we plays in Jeff Ma. And Jeff is, as I said, Chuck Todd already starts 0-1. He picked the Rams. He lost with the Rams. He lost big. Jeff's going to pick a bunch of games for us. Jeff's stuff is available on Bet the Process, the podcast Bet the Process. But overall, it seemed to me, Chuck and I talked about this, that week one would be the hardest week. Well, what do you got? You just have stuff from last year. You can't look at exhibition games and think they're meaningful because they're not meaningful. When you do this for a living, isn't week one the hardest week, Jeff?
I don't know if it's the hardest. It definitely, you have to have a slightly different approach, right? You have to have almost like a probabilistic approach because there's more unknown. And what you use going into the week are priors, meaning what the team was last year. You have to come up with some, you know, approximation or some way to measure personnel changes, coaches changes, and things like that. But again, all of it creates like a probabilistic model where, you know, even a game like last night, you know, the conventional wisdom going into last night was, all right, you know, the Bills seem like the odds-on best team in the NFL, but still pretty uncertain when it comes into that. And the line reflected that the market thought the Bills were the best team in the NFL, and yet it was hard to look at that game. I mean, even, you know, defending Chuck Todd, you know, even looking at that game, you would say the defending Super Bowl champions be giving 2.5 points
at home
to anyone, right?
Right.
And so,
right,
it's understandable, and yeah, I think week one does offer. Yeah, you know, week two, I think, is weird because people tend to overreact to week one. I think by the time you get to like the third or fourth week, you get a little bit more data. But again, like all of this information, Tony, is incorporated by a market. So the fact that they don't, you know, we don't have that much information means the market doesn't have that much information. And so it's all sort of, I wouldn't say any of it's easier or harder. It's just all different in terms of how you look for opportunities or advantages.
So, yeah, let me get to that. And let's say someone does this. This is what they do. They bet sports. They bet football. They think they know football. Do people like that, who in my youth were called Sharpies, people like that, do they see week one? Do you see week one as a betting opportunity? Or would that be a week where you would hold back? You might still bet, but you wouldn't bet at the numbers that you normally bet.
Yeah, I don't think there's a ton of I think the sharps don't have quite as much volume in week one, and I think probably the reason is if they did, they probably put the stuff down earlier when the limits were a little bit lower. I think you talked about this with Chuck yesterday. These lines have been out for quite some time,
yes,
which means
yeah.
that the market has been able to bet them into, you know, a number that is less efficient and is more efficient and is reflective of a large group of people believing something. So I do think, you know, again, like the day of or Sunday betting in the NFL markets is one of the hardest things in gambling to do because the markets are so efficient. You can get, you know, hundreds and thousands of millions of dollars down on these games. And the reason you can do that is because the market is so efficient. If sportsbooks are taking really large bets, it's because they're not afraid of losing money to you.
That makes sense to me. It does. And I also think, by the way, that the Wilbons of the world, who automatically assume that everything that comes out of Las Vegas or wherever it comes out of is wrong, that people like that are just not paying attention. That's not real smart betting, the assumption that if you make it, because he believes the Brooklyn Nets should never have been the favorites. Okay, but that doesn't mean the Buffalo Bills should not be the favorites. And the Buffalo Bills last night, particularly in the second half, the Buffalo Bills, again, going into L.A. against Super Bowl defending champion and beating them badly, that was pretty damned impressive, right? You're not going to say the Buffalo's going to – the number to get – to bet on Buffalo is going to be very high in week two, don't you think?
Well, not only did they beat them by 3 touchdowns, but they turned the ball over, what, 4 times?
And yeah.
To
yeah.
overcome something like that and still win by that many points is incredibly impressive.
Yeah. What do you got for us? Give us some games you got.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Patriots +3.5 against Miami. It's a little bit of a weird game. I mean, it's gone from 2.5 to 3.5 over the last couple weeks. And, you know, the general perception is that, oh, the Patriots, you know, don't know what they're doing. They don't have their offense set up. They have, you know, Matt Patricia, who's never called plays before, calling plays. And, you know, it's sort of hard for me to believe that Bill Belichick doesn't have a plan, right?
That's totally
the narrative
agree with
that
you.
Just doesn't really make sense. He's just not telling anyone what his plan is because there's nothing in his interest to do that. I think the concern, obviously, is that Miami is a very fast team. I think we're going to see that this year. They've built their team around speed. And the Patriots are a little bit of an older defense without a ton of speed. But I just have to take Belichick versus a first-year head coach in his first game, which tends to not be a great spot for teams. So I'm taking the pass plus a 3.5.
Okay, what else?
I'm going to take the Browns plus.
Really?
I don't know what you guys have in the 1.5. Yeah, this is a line, obviously, where Carolina has been favored, and everyone thinks this is the Baker Mayfield revenge game, and you got Baker versus Jacoby Brissett and all that. But the overall talent on both sides of the ball, with the exception of the quarterback, is so big in the favor of the Browns that I actually like them to win this game outright.
Okay. What else?
I thought the Steelers plus 6 against Cincinnati. Who do you think gives you better quarterback play, the corpse that was Ben Roethlisberger or Mitch Trubisky?
If you ask, well, Wilbon is, of course, rooting for Trubisky. Ben Roethlisberger was done. He was the walking dead last year. He was absolutely done. He could not throw the ball 20 yards down the field. So I think Trubisky actually gives you a lot more variables than Roethlisberger gives you. I don't know about Cincinnati. Cincinnati went to the Super Bowl. Cincinnati went to the Super Bowl, a pretty good team.
Yeah, it's getting priced in here, though. I mean, this is in Pittsburgh, getting 6 points. You know, again, I just think that you're going to see much better quarterback play, even with Trubisky, over what Roethlisberger was.
Roethlisberger
was terrible last year.
Agree.
So I just think it's too many points.
What else?
I'm going to take the Bears.
Really?
6.5 against San Francisco. Yeah, I mean, so I think San Francisco is going to be very good this year, and they're actually my pick to win the NFC and sort of like outside shot at winning the Super Bowl. After last night, it's hard to like think about anyone but the Bills winning the Super Bowl. But still, you still have Trey Lance in his first game ever, really. Like, I think he started a game last year, but this is like his first time really holding the baton. And I think, you know, in a situation like this, with the Bears getting 6.5 points on the road, I mean, at home, I just like taking the points here in this situation.
Wow. I would have gone the other way on that one, but okay. Okay. What else?
And then I'll take the Raiders plus the 3.5 against the Chargers. You know, the Chargers are the buzzy team this year. Justin Herbert, MVP candidate.
Yes.
On and on. Big skill positions. But the Raiders, you know, were a good team last year. They sort of powered through everything, beat the Chargers at the end of the year, have a much better coach now. I think McDaniel will be a great coach this time around. And I like, you know, the fact that the Raiders are getting the 3.5 points against in a situation where the home field is not huge and probably actually...
It's the Raiders' home field. It's the Raiders' home field. There's no question about that. They will have more fans there than the Chargers, don't you think? I do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of studies of really what drives home field, like travel and familiarity, sleeping in your own bed, all that kind of stuff. So it's not just crowd noise, but certainly crowd noise plays a role. And yeah, I do think the Raiders will have more fans there.
So this is interesting. This is a game that I think by week 10 we could look back on and say both these teams are really good, really good. The Raiders and the Chargers, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so for sure. And I've kind of been reading more and hearing more about the Raiders, and I'm pretty excited for their chances this year. Chargers the same. So yeah, I mean the NFC, the AFC West is loaded.
I'm looking at these games, and for week one games, a lot of these are really, really good. Tampa Bay at Dallas. I mean, maybe the game will stink, but you say to yourself, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch that game. Buffalo at the Rams. I'm going to sit down and watch that game. Green Bay at Minnesota. At Minnesota, like, the first week is loaded. I assume that's intentional, but it's a delight to look at these games, don't you think? It really is.
Yeah, no, it should be an interesting game. There's a lot of like home underdogs this week,
yes,
which is kind of strange to see. So we'll see. I mean, the games that you mentioned are both interesting. It'll be interesting to see Rodgers, how he plays. There's a lot of people that believe that the Vikings are going to be a much better addition by subtraction with Bo Zimmer there, who, by all accounts, was not a very good coach, and was not, you know, bringing them into this century with an approach that was
He's a defensive
modern at all.
Yeah, I agree.
The same thing is true with Tampa, right? They're saying that Arians was kind of Bowles is going to be a big step up, but then you have the situation where, you know, Brady is, I don't even know how old he is, and decided to miss, you know, 10, 15 days of camp, and it's not a great situation at Tampa. And you have a Cowboys team that was pretty overrated last year based on a lot of, you know, luck and you know, close game luck and turnover luck and those types of things, and they got a Coach McCarthy that, if it weren't for Jerry Jones being so completely loyal, you know, would probably be getting fired pretty soon.
I agree with that. At some point, Tom Brady's going to fall off the table. He's 45 years old. He's never been done. No one will ever dispute that he's the greatest of all time. You can't dispute that. His record proves that. But at some point, you'd fall off the table. We'll see. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you next week. Jeff can be heard on Bet the Process. Rufus and Jeff on Bet the Process. Jeff Ma, boys and girls, we will take a break, and we will have email and jingle when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
He's got your emails and your notes.
This is Sean, kids.
He'll read them for all you folks. 'Cause it's the mailbag. Yeah, it's the mailbag. If you drive a car,
no Subaru.
If you try to fax,
no, that won't do.
If you went to camp,
he might pick you.
If you send free stuff,
you'll get right through.
Thank you, Sean. That's wonderful. Nigel, you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. All you need to do is go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
That's it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let's just do this. She said there is no reason and the truth is plain to see, but I wandered through my playing cards, would not let her be. One of 16 Vestal Virgins who are leaving for the coast. And though my eyes were open, they might just as well have been closed. That's Procol Harum, A Whiter Shade of Pale, based on the work of Geoffrey Chaucer. I was not a Chaucer fan. I was a Shakespeare fan, not a Chaucer fan, but I am a Procol Harum fan. Thanks to our guests, Jason LaCanfora and Jeff Ma. Thanks to our sponsor today, Electric E-Bike. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review.
It's finally here, week one. Mornings are a little bit cooler, so go check out johnnyo.com. TK week one. The new Finney hoodie looks great.
Do you have one of those?
I don't have it yet.
Do the kids have them?
No, the kids are. We're doing back to school shopping with the kids. The Pamlico is also great for the whole family.
Okay. Okay. From Dan Byrne, a whole section of littles, many of whom I got to chat with, all charming and brilliant naturally. A first pitch, a little low and outside, but delivered from the rubber. An anthem warbled with love and hope. Half an inning of play-by-play on TV. Beeson on the Jumbotron. Here comes Tony's mailbag over the speakers. Himalayan sea-salted hot dogs. Chatter shirts everywhere. Chuck and Roxy winning the gummy bear eating contest on the field. Jason Smorrell hosting and presiding over the ceremonies. Jake Hafner basking in the glory of his La Cheesery Night idea. TK Show salutes. The Mets getting pounded and no one minded. Suffice to say, it was a night for the ages, and everyone on the TK Show was involved often and with great fondness from Dan Byrne. It's just
poetry.
It's such an honor. Honestly, it's such an honor that they did this, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
From Bill Burns, no relation to Dan Byrne. Leaving from White Lake in the scenic foothills of the Adirondack Park, I have my rope and yardstick ready to go, hoping it doesn't get confiscated at the gate. We will pre-feast at the iconic Dinosaur Barbecue restaurant, to which I've never been. I'll tell them you sent me. Pressure's on to remember some of the lyrics to Dan's fantastic songs. I'll sing regardless. Laura Little for many years, both radio and TV. La Cheeserie. From Ryan Weir. This email is being written as we head back to Buffalo, New York. Tom and I are friends for many years and immediately knew we were both coming to this game after you read the email. I can't convey how much fun it was to sit in Section 116 and converse with the other Littles. We met people from all around Syracuse, upstate New York, and as far as South Carolina. The general manager and staff of the Syracuse Mets were an absolute delight. From the podcast theme being played as people walked in, to the trivia game in your honor, he couldn't name all the rascals, to the many TK salutes and the countless chants of La Cheeserie. Tom and myself were even able to be interviewed by Roxy and Chuck of Loyal Littles Podcast during the game. We met Dan Byrne. It was an incredible night for all of us that attended. Jeff Ma would have lost a lot of money betting the under, but I got a great line from T-Boy Lachelet. La Cheeserie to everyone who attended and to all the people who love this podcast. This is signed by Ryan Weir and Tom Sulski. They send pictures. A whole bunch of pictures came in. Buffalo to Syracuse is a hike, kids. This is, again, it's nothing but an honor. From Carl in Oswego, New York. We missed you at the Syracuse Mets La Cheeserie night, but I did have a good time hanging out with dozens of your loyal fans. Most of them are nice. I got to hear Rope and a Yardstick live. You were right, Dan Byrne is brilliant. Thanks to Jason and Jake for hatching this ridiculous idea. I hope we can make it an annual event. I found out yesterday something I didn't know. There is a podcast about this podcast. That must be Roxy and Chuck, Michael. Yeah. A podcast about this podcast. One would think that this podcast would be enough.
No.
That it's not that hard to explain. There's no hidden meanings. It's just amazing. From Dave Thompson in Old Forge, New York. I wanted to send a message about how great La Cheeserie night was, but I won't be as clever as the other 54 people that messaged you about it. Thanks for everything. From Josh Hirth in Cape Coral, Florida. The other day I had the brilliant idea of checking on the status of LaCheeserie.com, and lo and behold, it's available. On GoDaddy.com, one could purchase the domain name for $20 to own it for 2 years. I quickly informed the woman to whom I'm related by marriage, a fellow Little. While she didn't tell me I couldn't buy it, she did question what I would do with it. Alas, I agree it should be purchased and used by someone who will actually build a website in honor of the show, which has brought us such joy since the internet radio days. So if any Little is up to the task, go get the site and report back when it's live. There were 75 people there, Michael.
Yeah.
75
people. And that's just with a few weeks of notice.
You know, wow. Wow. Other things from Ryan Corlin, Charleston, West Virginia. 19 addresses, 16 aunts and uncles, 12 plants in my home office, 8 jobs, 6 surgeries, 5 states, 3 cars, 2 time zones, and a partridge in a pear tree. From John Marshall in Durham, North Carolina. Did Sally Jenkins start a new game about rivalries? If so, as a native of Chapel Hill and current resident of Durham, I have to say Duke-UNC is the best rivalry. My parents were in attendance of the infamous Duke-UNC game in the 70s, excuse me, when UNC rallied to tie Duke in regulation, being down 8 points with 17 seconds remaining. During those 17 seconds, my mom, a UNC alum, and my dad, a Duke alum in grad school at UNC, left their seats so my dad could talk trash to their friends. As UNC mounted their comeback, they stopped and watched the end of regulation from the steps and then made their way back to their seats for OT. UNC emerged victorious, and according to my mom, my dad got really quiet. As a double UNC graduate, this is my favorite story. And again, we have Liz and Chan.
Yeah.
They can't watch the basketball game.
No, UNC was his childhood team until she went to Duke.
One more from Joey Vosters. Here's a fun change-up to the address game that caused me grief as a young kid. My address changed 4 times, but my family never moved. First, they changed the country highway that we lived on from Route 5 to Highway N. A year later, they renumbered all the houses, and we went from 395 to a system with a letter and 4 numbers. A year after that, a new zip code was created, and I got my 4th address in as many years. Needless to say, this was confusing for a kid in preschool, and at one point when my first grade teacher asked me to write my address, I just shrugged. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Later, he gets the rebound, passes it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes the dynamite.
back of a paddy wagon, Dan Byrne produced a smile. In his teeth was a bobby pin. In less than a minute, we rolled into the street. And Nigel called our getaway man. It was a chimpanzee in a suit and a Subaru with a pipe and a pickup, Bud Grant. Joe Arrow sang Total Eclipse of the Heart, and we parked on a neighborhood street. In the lining of his Indochino suit, Nigel had stowed all the money. Dan Byrne never wanted to be silent, said, straight cash, homie. We're set to split when an old man out walking his dog rapped on our window and said, what are you doing out here? This is a neighborhood street. Do you know who I am? Was distracted by a deer and a squirrel who bounded into his garden tomatoes. So we got away clean after climbing into an RV, and we stopped for Bethesda bagels. Do you know